Stardate 96877.14. Welcome back to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name is Mike Moody. With me is...
Mariah Gossett.
Grant Davis.
And...
Clyde Haynes.
We're here to talk about Season 2, Episode 13 of Star Trek Discovery. Such Sweet Sorrow, the penultimate episode of Season 2. I want to jump right into this, but first, I got to remind everybody to visit us at StarTrekPod.com. You can find all of our back episodes there. We covered all of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. We did a few bonus episodes in the middle of the two seasons. And of course, we've been covering all of Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. So visit StarTrekPod.com, subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts. Leave us a review, especially on Apple. We'd really appreciate that, a 5-star review. That's one great way that you can support this podcast. Grant, we have another way people can support us.
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. There you can go and actually give us money. We like money, and you guys can give it to us each episode that we release. Or is it monthly? How do you do it?
What?
It's $2 per episode.
$2 per episode.
Give us $2 an episode. That's all we ask. And actually give us $5 an episode, but, you know, $2 minimum.
You can go up to 5 for sure.
You know, 10?
20? Sure.
Is there a threshold?
I'll just update that right now. Actually, you can donate whatever you want.
Yeah, just give us a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But if you give us at least $2 an episode, you guys get exclusive access to our Slack channel where you can come join us and a bunch of our fellow Trekkie fans and discuss each episode. And you can also get access to the occasional little Patreon episode. We'll record a little mini episode talking about this or that that's Trek tangential. And yeah, you guys would be the only ones who get to hear us read Clyde's Trek/fic.
We're still going with that, aren't we?
So many people are going to be disappointed. So many people.
It's good writing. Yeah. We did.
Oh, we've done that before. Yeah.
Hyde Clanes wrote some really good juicy stuff.
Yeah. Pretty. It was quite juicy.
There was a lot of juices.
Lots of moisture in that one. Okay. We're ready to talk about this episode.
Such Sweet Sorrow.
Why did they call it Such Sweet Sorrow? Because I know why, but I was so excited about this episode. I guess we're doing hot takes and I'm going first.
Hot takes.
All right. Guys, I'm really, what?
That was just an aggressive hot take.
Oh, it's pretty aggressive.
See Grant turning purple over there.
Trying to breathe.
Man, this was a really exciting episode for me. And, you know, we're going to touch on all of it. We're going to touch on all the emotional moments, all the big goodbyes. There was like 1,000 I love yous in this episode, which I appreciate as an emotional human being who's not an emotionless Vulcan. Grant's over there making noises with his phone.
We don't have to point out everything I'm doing over here.
Professional podcaster.
I've been doing this for only 11 years.
This episode was largely all set up, but where the setup is going, where it could potentially be going, was really exciting for me. I love game changers when it comes to series. You know, I love episodes like this that lead up to something that could be really exciting. Is Discovery going to jump to the future, chart a brand new course for this show, and stop being a prequel? That's the question. And they're really teasing that out. So I'm excited by that. That's my hot take. Who wants to go next?
Oh, man. Yeah, I agree. This episode was really exciting. I thought it went by so fast. I felt like I blinked and all of a sudden they were like, next time. And I was like, what? What do you mean next time? So yeah, I agree. I think they're setting up some really exciting things. I've got, you know, lots of good Mariah theories that inevitably will be wrong. And then...
Hashtag Mariah theories that are inevitably wrong.
Inevitably wrong. But Michael is the freaking Red Angel.
Yeah, you called that one.
Yep.
You got it.
No. She is a Red Angel.
Wrong still. Multiple Red Angels.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get into it. But anyway, I really enjoyed it. I agree. I thought a lot of the goodbyes and the I love yous were sincere and really great. And yes, that's my hot take.
All right, you know how I feel about this. So Mike's already said he loved it.
Uh-oh.
I imagine Grant's going to say he loved it. So, of course, I'm going the exact opposite way.
Bring the contrarian attitude.
And say I hated the episode and all the sappiness. No, actually, what? I love the episode. And I thought that it was just the right...
The studio is frozen over.
I know.
A twist.
And it was just the right amount of, like, the emotional and the drama. Like, I actually was looking at it and said, it's not overdone. Like, it's, like, I had the moment. Even the Burnham walking away from Ash and then turning around, I was like, doesn't bother me this week. This week, I'm all in. I thought it was great. I thought I thought they got the tone just right.
You know, that scene, I'm going to throw us on a tangent already, but that scene where she's walking away and she turns around, they both look at each other and she runs back into his arms and they kiss. It reminded me of that scene for some reason in Meet Joe Black. It's been trending today for some reason on Twitter where Claire Forlani and Brad Pitt are walking away from each other, but they keep looking back at each other at the wrong time. So he doesn't see that she's looking back at him and she doesn't see that he's looking back at her.
And it goes forever.
And it goes for like 8 minutes of this until he gets hit by not one, but two cars and she walks away.
Have you seen that You're the Man Now dog page? It was like a decade ago. I don't even know if that website still exists, but there was it was just one of those things that would loop video clips, mm-hmm. and it was him getting hit by the cars and going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It was so good.
Not a great film.
My hot take?
Your hot take.
I'm mostly favorable. I think I'm actually going to be a little bit of the outlier here because there was something a bit tedious about this being a 100% hour-long hype episode.
Yes.
It was all just build up, and it's just like blue balls the episode for me in a way. Like it was
there
like,
were emotional payoffs.
There, it's coupled with one of those things that for me never really seems to resonate as much. I don't do a podcast called This Is Us where I talk about one of the most saccharine shows because
shots
I don't
fired over here.
Yeah,
Clyde does. You guys should check out This Is Us. With
Shade thrown, shots fired.
But. Saccharine type moments like this, which there were a plenty, it started becoming a little tedious. In fact, the fact that everyone got a goodbye, that there was an I love you for every single person, I don't know. I was just like, well, now it cheapens all the other ones. And like it just kept becoming like diminishing returns a little bit for me. And this is me being super nitpicky and bitchy about one small thing. Because overall, of course, I'm still in the tank for this show. I really enjoyed it. And I'm really excited for all the things it's setting up for the next episode.
Fair points. I mean, fair points all. Listener at Baron Von Grant, right? It's what it is.
You can tell he's wrong.
Give me the hate.
Yeah.
I feed off of it.
Hey, can we get in our predictions for season 3
Let's
already?
Just do that now.
Because I'm just going to say, I predict in season 3 that Clyde and Grant actually might agree on their thoughts about a show. Because I feel like we're always opposite. No, you didn't love the goodbyes. That was one of my favorite moments.
You do a podcast on
I know.
I know you're going to love that.
But typically with this show, I'm usually the guy who goes, hey, that's way too much. Like, it's too dramatic.
They were short and they were sweet. And it was little character moments that I think is really setting us up for the next season where we're going to have a smaller ensemble. And we're going to finally get to dig into these secondary characters.
I think that's you're spot on.
Minus Blondie, who got nothing this entire episode.
Nelson.
But one little, like,
shout out. Like,
great job stepping in.
You're here, too.
Yes,
I was like, Nelson. Her name is Nelson, because I had no idea. Why is she standing in the back? Yeah. Why is she coming? I don't know who she is. And I was like, oh, you stepped up for Ariam. Got it. Now I cannot
I
think
like
you're crazy.
She got something, and then she got cut. Like, some stuff happened. Like, they were like, we got to cut some time. We're going to just cut out her goodbye. Oh, we don't have time. You don't know what I mean? Like, I feel like she probably had
more scenes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one really knows her now. Like, she is the actress who played Ariam in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And then they replaced Ariam with some other actress just so that they could bring back this actress as a real human and still have that emotional payoff of killing off someone because they can't ever really commit to killing off anyone. They bring everyone back from the dead in this episode of the show.
Lorca's still dead,
much to my chagrin.
I will say this. You know, I've been just asking for some character development of the people on the bridge. And I felt like part of the goodbye was I got it a little bit, right?
Right.
Like I got just a little bit from each of these,
like,
kind of
who are segments. They choosing yeah. to say goodbye to? Oh, their best friend or a sibling or a parent.
Right. Who knew Stamets had a sibling?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like he did mention it before.
Probably.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just I thought it was I that was a moment that I loved, and I was like, "This is great." We're getting a little bit of their insight.
Well, let's run through this. It was written by the new showrunner Michelle Paradise, who's going to be running all of season three. Also, Jenny Lumet and Alex Kurtzman, who also wrote, as we know, all of the J.J. Abrams Trek movies, co-wrote them with Roberto Orci. So this was directed by Olatunde Onsumsanmi.
Man, I mean, that's like the most prolific director, I think, on this show, right?
I think so, yeah.
He's come in quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Great visuals, although I am getting tired of all the effect shots starting upside down or going in a circle.
Man, I don't know. What,
no?
I was watching this on my tablet, and I was like, did I turn this upside down? Like, there was a moment where I wasn't sure, did I do something wrong?
Is the screen locked upside down?
I was like, because I was moving at the time. I was walking from one room to another just at that moment, and I was like, what the hell did I do? And then I realized, no, it's the way it was shot. So it kind of threw me there for a minute.
There's also my least favorite spinning around a singular table shot, which I just don't.
Yes.
And I'm like, just once or twice, I get they're standing around a table. I know who's here.
I will say, I love Spike Lee, but that's my least favorite thing on the planet. That long shot where it just spins around that one person. It's in every movie.
I like the floating Spike Lee shots. Yeah,
those are better. Yeah.
I really appreciate in a space show when there's no up and down and left and right really in space.
Okay.
That the director would make the choice of having a camera that kind of free floats and
an
then
anti-gravity
has to
camera.
Has to spin to lock into place for scenes here and there. I think it's a fun, quirky choice.
Yeah.
And I found the visuals in this episode arresting. The cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all of it. Like, and yeah, it was pretty fantastic.
So, and can I say the coolest shuttles I've ever seen?
Shuttles look good.
I thought the connectors between the ships looked really, really awesome when they docked.
Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool idea. Instead of just beaming everybody over, let's just make some bridges. And we're going to have a weird Tron-esque background as we walk to the other ship.
Well, and didn't everybody, like, what was that moment when you saw the bridge of the Enterprise? I mean, weren't you a little like, oh my, like.
I think it was the same moment for all of us.
I mean, was like, pause, full screen. 10 minutes later.
I mean, it was. I also had to pause and go, wait a second. Like, take this in. Like, don't just let this go by, because this is the bridge of the Enterprise, though much, much shinier.
Pretty shiny.
I was a little disappointed in the Enterprise.
It looked okay. I know it's supposed to be orange. It looked red to me.
I saw red too.
That's fine. I thought it looked
A lot of red shirts too.
There are a lot of red shirts in there. Yeah, I thought it was. Little shiny, little blingy. I wasn't necessarily disappointed in it. I thought it had enough homage to the original series bridge for me.
The shapes and the layout.
Yes.
Correct.
Definitely the shapes.
Definitely shapes and layout. Yes. It's more, I just wish there wasn't as much heavy dark grays and blacks, because I think almost all OG series, any series of Star Trek I've ever seen, the bridge of the main ship is always in more neutrals, very earth tone. They're a science ship. It feels like a lab and less like a military ship. Well,
and they used to have a sepia tone on the camera for all of the filming of those episodes, though. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, I was thinking, kind of along with you, Mariah, is that it felt a little dark. Like, just in, you know, the shadow, but that's much more.
I literally wrote a little dark ?
But that's Discovery, where if you go back and watch the TOS and even TNG, it's like there's full on lights everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like I dare you to find a shadow.
Yeah.
And so I think that was one of the differences, that it's like
mood lighting.
Yeah, the mood lighting.
Well, there can be an in-universe, you know, reason for why it looks different. I mean, it's Pike's reign. Maybe they retrofit it to make it look shittier once Kirk shows up.
I mean,
Kirk is super into the retro.
Yeah.
Yeah, when
Space babes.
Green space babes.
Green space babes, yeah.
When I first saw them board the Enterprise, it seemed like kind of jarring, what's it called? Wizard of Oz, when all of a sudden they go to the land of color.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa. Everything is so bright and primary colors everywhere.
Technicolor.
I don't know how to handle all of this. And then I think it was Georgiou popping on. She goes, orange. Really?
ugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, she's echoing me.
Yeah, they're kind of hedging their bets. Like, yeah, we're going to go all out and make this look kind of retro and different. And also, we're going to shit on it just to cover our bases.
It's a good call.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things that every time I see those Enterprise uniforms next to like a Discovery uniform, I'm always thinking, gosh, those Discovery uniforms look so much better.
I got to fight you on that.
Oh,
man.
Here we go again.
I love these retro-looking Enterprise uniforms. I wish everybody on Discovery had these uniforms. No. They're fucking cool.
No, I mean, I love the nostalgia, but in terms of actual aesthetics, yeah, there's no way.
But I agree with Mike. I think they feel closer to like science ship and less military. I think Discovery feels like naval officers.
I agree with you there. It does feel like naval officers, but I think that's the cool.
Naval officers versus elementary school.
Oh.
Versus science lab.
That's what I think.
You know what I'm ready? I'm
they look like
for,
superheroes.
Though? I just want someone to pull the sweater down like Picard.
Oh, yeah.
Do.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Somebody's done that before. A Stamets does that sometimes.
I see.
Yeah.
So are we going to go linearly?
Let's go linearly. We start off. We're going to
try that again.
Okay, so we start off on a beach with Amanda and Sarek making soup or something.
Hold up.
What are they doing?
Can we start with the preview that they showed?
Okay, yeah.
They're like the previously on or whatever it's called?
Oh, we get the tip off that we're going to see Poe again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is the first time I think they've referenced one of the short treks in a previously, right?
Nope. Before nope. Saru's.
Saru.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got all excited about that. But also I thought that
second time.
It's a little bit
kind of... such a dummy. No. Just kidding.
Where did that come from?
I'm sorry.
It's true, but shit. No, I thought it was just kind of bonkers, like what all they show in that like previously on, because like we have the clip of the feral teenage space queen runaway going on there, and it's like, oh, but also we have stealing time crystals that show your future. There's a hyper intelligent AI that's using nanobots to reanimate corpses, and like, this is all in the same show. This is like what everything's been building
right.
up to.
Yeah,
it's just a lot that they've gone in these different directions, and now they're starting to fuse a lot of these concepts, mm-hmm. and it's really impressive and ambitious what this show's done.
I love the fact, and I know we're probably going to disagree again, but I love the fact that I felt like I got paid.
No, you didn't.
For
I'm kidding.
No, there was some payoff for watching the short treks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like, I felt like, yeah, if you didn't watch the short treks, then you got a little bit, but you didn't see the whole thing. And for someone who sat and watched them, and then had to wait a month or so to watch the next one, I felt like there was a reward for that.
It's a little extra.
Yeah.
And I thought that I also know, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, but because I've seen Calypso, like the idea of them moving forward in the future isn't that like foreign to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even like, I'm like, okay, that all that makes sense.
All the pieces seem to be falling into place from these breadcrumbs at the short treks.
You know, I've been looking for.
Right. So. I got to say, this version of Poe, I loved. Remember when we first watched that short trek and the character of Poe was kind of hard to define. She was all over the place.
She's a feral wildling.
She was a feral wildling.
That goes
and then
invisible.
She's a teenager, yeah. And who knows? Like, her character was all over the place. So it was hard to connect with her. But this time we meet up with her, she really knows who she is. She's a really well-defined character and a really fun presence. But we're going linearly, so we'll get to that.
I've got a big question about that.
All right.
I kind of want to go there now, but mm-hmm. we can wait.
Don't ruin my fun.
Right. Let's go back to the beach.
The Sarek's beach.
Doing some hippie yoga bullshit and getting in touch with his chakra. Just so you can find out that
Burnham's in trouble.
Burnham's in trouble.
He's got a premonition.
And then we get another voiceover from Michael Burnham telling us.
You don't like the voiceovers?
Telling us what we all already know. Telling us what the previously on already told us about why they have to blow up the ship, about controls on the way, et cetera, when all we want to see is forward momentum. At least I did. But we're getting Burnham wrapping everything up again.
I have a hypothesis as to why that happens.
Yeah.
So I think it's because
theory time.
It's literally a logistics theory as a producer head. So it's because in most other countries they watch this on Netflix, and I'm assuming if you are binge watching on Netflix, it skips the previously on.
But you're binge watching, like you just saw the last episode, right?
Exactly.
You know what's happening.
But that's why they do the vocal recap, because it pulls in some of the other pieces.
Okay.
Anyway, my thoughts.
That's a good call.
No, you're right, but
everything is made for binge watching now, and so I think they do these things for that.
You're right, but it does pull me out. It's like, okay, right. This is a TV show.
We got some cute little moments from it. You see that Tilly is trying to collect all the snow globes she can to fit them in her bag. She's like, no, I need one more snow globe to fit in my bag. Probably from her mom. That's my guess. I think her mom gave her some snow globes.
You
like
never
the
know.
Only thing that good for nothing mom gave her.
See, that right there is, I think, kind of feeds Mike's point for me. And that's because I didn't even catch that. Because when the voiceover happens, I'm tuning out a little bit.
Like, you didn't see Saru grab his circumcision blade or whatever?
I saw it. Well, yeah, here's what happened. Later. I saw it. But I didn't hear her talk about it.
No, he grabs it right after Tilly grabs
the snowboard. I saw the actions, but yeah. It wasn't.
I didn't register till he was talking about it later.
I didn't need Burnham to tell me what was going on. I knew where those blades were.
Yeah.
The snow globe thing?
Action that everyone's doing, like we're preparing to leave the ship or preparing to blow up the ship. The Enterprise is coming. We're setting up the bridge and we're all going to leave. And everyone's doing that, and everyone's collecting what they need to collect and getting out, and people are nervous and hurried. That visually, that story is told and conveyed very well, but I don't need Michael Burnham like telling me what's happening the whole time.
Yeah.
It's a nitpick.
But isn't you guys correct me because I'm not as familiar with Trek, but isn't it one of the integral things of Trek to have a captain's log element at the beginning of a lot of these?
Sure.
I thought that was like such a trademark of it.
Yes,
and
but
how they kind of creatively adapted that to being like journal entries or.
But it used to more like set up the theme of this particular episode.
And the captain's log.
Yeah.
Typically gives us new information as well. This didn't.
Right? Yes. Isn't this setting up the theme of parting is such sweet sorrow, and yet all of the things that one loves, I guess?
All good points. But again, it's not. She's not giving us new information.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's
forward momentum.
Forward momentum, exactly.
I think the other thing about a captain's log is it's giving us new information, it's giving us insight into what the captain or that person is thinking that we would not be able to figure out on our own usually, right? And
right.
So it's this thought of, this is why I'm doing this. You've seen me not do, like if it was Data working with Spot, you're like, why the hell is he with this cat? And he's then telling why he's with the cat and what
I've assigned Spock to work with Data on blah, 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 blah.
Like, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that way you have no idea what's going on. And so the captain's log or the personal log helps you. This is a recap. And so I was kind of like,
recap.
I was looking going, those are the knives that are important to Saru. Okay, so I'm watching, but I just kind of filtered it out.
But to Grant's point, there was some great, you know, character visuals, like when the Enterprise shows up and Spock gives it that sign of acknowledgement where he's just staring at it. And even though he's a Vulcan, doesn't really convey emotion, you could still see in his eyes he's happy to see his ship.
He's
that
like,
was
look
nice.
At that sweet ride.
So there was one thing, though, I did pick up on from the voiceover was when she was like, I wish I had the same sort of faith that Pike does. And I was like, obviously, he thinks everything's going to be fine because he has now seen his future, right? And so I would think that would mean he assumes they're successful because he lives long enough to be at a training thing,
nice.
Running this training simulation, getting blown up, blah, 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 blah.
Melting
his face. And he's like, oh, I have this tragic ending. But by doing this, I've still seen that we are successful and not all life has been crushed.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When they're all evacuating to the Enterprise, did you guys for a second think like, oh wait, has this whole show been like a backdoor two-season entrance to an actual Enterprise show?
I was thinking that last week because they made the plan to blow up the ship last week and then Pike called the Enterprise.
Right.
I think I even said on the podcast, my best case scenario here would be that everybody goes to the Enterprise. Now we have a Pike manning the Enterprise show with Saru as his number one and Michael Burnham. You know, that would
for
be great.
For a second,
great.
I was like, oh, wait, they might actually pull that off. But that would be so bonkers. There's so many
people.
That would
be great.
So I'm with Mike. That would be great. At no point did I think they were going to blow up the ship. And the reason why is because Short Trek Calypso. We know the ship doesn't get destroyed.
Right.
So, I was thinking about that. I thought they could potentially do it.
There was no chance that ship was going to blow up.
Yeah.
Here's my other thought is I think I don't know when they finished writing and when they found out they actually got a next season, right?
Oh.
And so I think they were writing to be smart in case they did not get renewed and then they could do an Enterprise. And the writer's room is like, we're ready. Let's go.
Right.
We're just going to jump in and do an Enterprise show.
They could still do it, man.
As long as you don't call it Enterprise, right. Then we're
it's
great.
It's been a long
Sorry.
Okay, now I wanted to point out something. Maybe it's a little controversial, but I think that Pike's a little bit of a dick because he's standing or he's sitting in the seat when we know the ship's about to like be blown up forever. And he's just like, my discovery. And I was thinking, hold up, dude. Your ship is the Enterprise. And you have Saru having to stand right by your side like your pet cat while you post up in that seat. That's kind of some bullshit, isn't it? Let Saru sit in the seat for once. It's about to go under. Let him have the seat.
He's earned the seat quite a few times.
Pike has earned that. I mean, think about, okay, he's been on this ship, what, 6 months?
This carpetbagger, Johnny come lately.
They've been through hell and back.
To be that hot, you have to have a little bit of an ego and an arrogance,
right?
You
said he was a dick. He's a swinging dick, I'll tell you that.
I mean, the swag and confidence he has in a room.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm with, like, it didn't bother me. I was like, eh. Like, I'm just, yeah, I was like, hey.
I acknowledge your point. You're heard and seen, my friend.
Yeah, okay, thanks. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I have one more note from the voiceover. We're not even done with the voiceover, guys. This is going to be
a long show. We're going to get past the teaser soon.
Get your popcorn, listeners.
So, because Michael Burnham says something about grand design, and I had kind of plugged this into, if you are a Patreon subscriber and you're on our Slack channel, you get to talk to me about philosophy.
Yeah.
And so the idea of determinism versus sort of free will and the idea of the time crystal as being this sort of like theological push towards possible theological based determinism, and that there are, you know, and that happens a lot in Star Trek, right? So there are, you know, prophecies that are told that somehow have something to do with plot lines from older shows. And then for this whole season, we've been getting this time crystal that somehow locks into your future, which to me says that there isn't a lot of free will going on in the Star Trek universe.
See, I hear exactly what you're saying. I don't know if I just kind of ignored some of that because it feels like it's contradictory to what we all know as sci-fi canon around time and time travel. And that is, once you've seen it, you can change it. Right? I mean, that's typically what we see.
That's not what law says.
Well, I mean, I'm focused in, listen, yeah. I'm focused in on the Bible of time travel when it comes to science fiction.
And right. That is back in time.
Back to the future. It all starts there. And once you know what's going to happen, you can change it and alter your timeline. Right? And so I think I just look and go, all right, now that you've seen, and the issue that I was struggling with watching the show was and this is going to jump ahead just a little bit. Don't hate me, Mike. There are two different people were exposed to the crystal and saw that there's an unexploded photon torpedo that hits the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them has said anything about it. So I'm thinking, if you say something about it, that doesn't have to happen.
Also,
true.
To monkey wrench this a little bit, and I don't have the greatest memory here, but we had a Harry Mudd episode last season where he, like, bad shit happens.
Nice.
With the time crystal, and he keeps using it to jump back after people die.
Right.
That people die, he jumps back and changes stuff. He jumps back and changes stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Until he, like, gets a Groundhog Day scenario that he likes, right?
Yes. But my whole thing is them telling Pike, this now has to be your future no matter what else happens. You are seeing the way that you're going to die. So I don't know if that's just what the time crystal does. Is like, we're going to show you how you're going to die. And once you're okay with that and you take this crystal, that's how you die.
However, he is the architect now of his own future because he chose his future. He was able to choose that path for himself.
Right. But is that just the illusion of free will?
Mm.
But I think the writers are using that because they know that a lot of their audience is going to assume the determinism is now at play. Like, mm-hmm. like all of this has to happen. But if that is that can't possibly be the fate of our Discovery crew. They're not all going to get shot in the head. Something else is going to happen. And yet that was telegraphed as the ultimate future. So it must be that they're trying to trick us one way, and we're not actually in the Prime universe. This is an alternate universe where Pike lives forever and he stays on our ship with us.
Fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, my thing with the like Rena, again, we're jumping all over the place. It's a timey-wimey time travel episode.
This is going to be a great episode.
We do.
So because Burnham and Rena both see that future, I feel like it's more the time crystal saying this current timeline is going to happen based on what is currently happening right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so unless they change a big factor,
I feel like Jet Reno's going to be that factor. I think that is just going to be, she's a,
I'm gonna
that
try to
martyr
save
complex,
the day.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She'll be like, I accept my death. She's the noble person. And Jet Reno's like, let's just like turn the screw a little bit more to the left and maybe that won't happen.
I feel like Reno's going to jump in and be like, you got to fly the ship and distract the people so they don't shoot Enterprise or something crazy like that.
Well,
right?
I mean, okay, so we get to the end. and it's established that everybody's going to, all our space friends are going to jump to the future, including Spock somehow. But then Reno does see that there is a torpedo lodged in the Enterprise, right? Mm-hmm. And then we leave it there. You know, a little after that, the episode ends.
We're just following the theme of the show and going from the beginning to the end.
That just telegraphs to me that Spock can't go into the future with everybody. Jet Reno's going to let everybody know this is going to happen to the Enterprise. He's going to take a shuttle and go save it, and they're going to leave without him because he can't, right?
Since we're jumping to the end, I'm going to jump to the preview the preview for next week.
Oh, my God. We're going to the future.
Well, I think I'm with you, Mike. Yeah. So I think, one, when you think about time travel and this whole prequel, the thing about a prequel is that they're things that you know, right? Like if you watch Better Call Saul because you like Breaking Bad, then, you know, Mike Ehrmantraut is a superhero because you know that no matter what happens, he won't die because he's in the next, he's right. in the future.
There's lots of winks and nods to
exactly.
the future.
Exactly.
And he ages backwards.
Yes. But when you look at what we're dealing with here, similarly, you know that no matter what happens, Spock is going to be okay. He's going to be more than okay. You know that the Enterprise is not going to be destroyed, right? So these are things that we know, unless, to Grant's point, we are in some alternate universe that is not the prime universe.
So what you
know those things.
What you're saying is Mariah's theory of determinism is correct in Star Trek if we're talking about plot lines we've already seen play out on other shows. Like Pike.
Sure.
And like sure. Spock.
The other thing is Spock loves to time travel. Does it all the time. So who knows?
It's his bag, yeah.
He could be the one who's actually sending the signals. Like they jump and then Spock is using them so he can get back to the correct timeline and get back on the Enterprise. Season 3 predictus.
Oh my God. That's an interesting one.
Whoa. Yeah. That means they can take Spock with them. Fuck yeah.
Because he signed on for the next season. There's pictures of him with no beard.
That's true. Yeah.
I would like to say, so we're back with Culber. And I was thinking getting off the ship is actually best for Culber. Like, he needs to, like, move. He's got too much baggage on the ship that he doesn't know how to process. For him leaving, it would actually probably be one of the most therapeutic things for him. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, I think that there's something really sad about seeing Stamets say goodbye to the spore drive when they thought they were just jumping leaving the ship. Because isn't there something like a little bit more intimate that went on like with his relationship with this spore drive?
What are you saying?
I don't mean intimate like sexual. I mean like intimate like he was a part of the galaxy, the multiverse,
right.
in being a conduit for it,
right.
And this was a device that allowed him to share something that like no other person in the galaxy has ever experienced.
But I think we're meant to.
I don't know. I just thought there was like a little bit more weight to that goodbye.
There should have been, but you know, there was the story or the show is more concerned with him either continuing or ending his relationship with Culber. So
right.
that's where the focus was. But that is a good point, and I would have liked to have seen that happen, you know, because his mind and body was connected to something that a human's mind and body is not supposed to endure, and it changed him forever, you know? So yeah, it's if he does leave it behind, he's leaving behind an experience that no one has ever had. Yeah, something that's truly life-changing.
You moving guys, from third dimension back into 2D. Like, right. How do we do that?
Yeah.
You guys got really deep on this. I got distracted. So, I mean...
We also skipped the really fun... I thought there was no bad ideas, and then they were all telling Giorgio that was a terrible idea.
Hilarious, by the
so
way.
Which is so funny.
But in that scene between Culber and Stamets, I got distracted twice, right? One...
Tight suits?
No, when Stamets starts talking about how he was going to leave the Discovery
again,
I started writing my letter to CBS about how I was pissed off.
Stamets cannot leave. Anthony Rapp cannot go anywhere.
So I've got a couple lines here. I was starting my complaint letter, and then Culber says, "Well, when the Enterprise comes back, I'm going to join him." And I was like, "You, sir, are no Mr. Bones." So I was like, "You're not Bones." So I got distracted in what was actually going on. But
it's got a bone to pick. Also, yeah. We jumped way ahead. I was talking about it much earlier. Yes. Scene with Culber and Stamets.
Let me just say this one thing, and we'll go to where we're supposed to be.
Okay.
Is Bones on... Bones is not the Doctor right now in the Enterprise.
No.
It's some older, crustier white dude.
Maybe.
Who's Pike's Doctor.
But we know that within 10 years, Bones will be the Doctor on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And so I was just like...
Who's to say Bones wasn't a sexy Latin man 10 years before he showed up on the Enterprise?
I mean, that is some interesting casting. I mean, but anything can happen. So, okay.
Where are we, Grant? Take us back in time.
Let's go back
in time.
So,
you were talking about when I get it. Now.
Yeah, we're still
saying
kind
goodbye
of
to the ship. Yeah, okay.
So Burnham, we jumped to the scene where Burnham is taking a look at the time crystal, and she's actually finally piecing together some of that 7-dot mystery. It seems like, but you know, once again. Terrible timing, Burnham. We're trying to all leave the ship and blow things up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the best time for you to realize that, oh, wait, all of this was a pattern because the time crystals are relevant.
Yeah, I do like that she's the only one who really wants to seek meaning in all of this. Like, Pike is doing some great leadership. He's like, we got to move forward. We got to go. This is the way.
He's being very pragmatic.
Very pragmatic, yeah. But she still feels so emotionally connected to everything that has been happening, and she's searching for meaning here. So, yeah, she's the one who's taking it slow, who's going to hover around a time crystal.
Rightfully so.
I mean,
she's got a lot of, like, emotional investment in this, especially, you know, given it was her mom. That was a Red Angel and her.
Yeah.
Not rightfully so. They got to move. So this is something that she could do.
I know. They keep bringing up their
the Enterprise.
Ticking clock.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's a clock everywhere. And she's like, yeah. I mean, we even see Pike pause like, you're coming, right? And he finally just, do what the hell you want to do. You want to get blown up in the ship? Fine.
Well,
and he walks off. And I'm like, good call, man.
Well, no, because she has to stay back. She has to touch the time crystal to get a preview of this disturbing vision she'll see once everyone walks over to the Enterprise. We get a preview of it.
She could have done that on the Enterprise. Nothing stopping her from being on the bridge, like, and I don't mean like the bridge of the Enterprise. I mean that evacuation bridge. Halfway through, she could have just like reached in a bag and touched it and be like,
that's right, they took it over there, didn't they?
Yeah. What happened? And then moved on. She didn't have to do it right then and there.
I wanted everyone to, I wish this was a video podcast sometimes just to see how Clyde reacts when he touches the time crystal.
Yeah. Just in the room.
Listener, if you want to see Clyde's fun gesticulations and you want this to be a video podcast, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Give us a budget for video.
I was channeling my inner like Rick and Morty in that. Yes.
So, Saru and Pike set the remote auto-destruct sequence. It's pretty cool. And they walk over to the bridge. We see all the reddish oranges, or the red oranges all over the Enterprise.
And that's where Cornwall went. She went to...
I didn't know she was captaining the Enterprise.
No one knew that. Handing out a bunch of therapy to those people, I'm sure. Yeah. That's where she's been. Okay.
I thought it was interesting that number one was actually sitting at, like, the con. Like, that was fascinating to me. I don't think we... Because, I mean, I guess to the Enterprise that we're used to, Spock is number one, right?
Yes.
And
Kirk, yeah.
And he's not at a con. I guess
he's a science officer.
He's at the science station. So,
well, I really like some of the agency they gave number one here. That was pretty cool because if you watch The Cage and The Menagerie, she's a really great character. Like, she is very tough. She's kind of like Bones, and she takes the initiative. So here we got to see Rebecca Romijn Stamos do that as well. You know, they were like, no, I already retrofitted all the shuttles. I know what I'm doing, and the shit's going to go down.
She was ready for the fit to hit the Shan.
And she got rid of all the goddamn holograms.
That's right. We retcon the holograms away.
It's a cutesy thing that her name's only number one, right? The whole time? Like, they never actually say her name?
No, they never named her character.
They even have, like, a specific point where he says, like, great job, number one. She's like, thanks, Captain. And then someone else, or Cornwall, is like, you too. And he's like, thanks, Admiral. And I was like, Admiral, Captain, number one. Like, no one's using names
no
here.
No names.
Doctor.
Exactly, right?
So the auto-destruct fails.
They try and shoot it. It fails.
Shields
the
are
ship's
up.
Like, fuck you.
I was just like, has Discovery become Control? That's what I thought had happened.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, why would you blow that shit up, right? Like, that is the ship you want to be on right now.
Discovery creates the Borg? Is that what it
no,
is?
No. I'm just saying, you've got a ship that refuses to be destroyed.
Yeah.
That's the ship you want to be on, right?
But it did remind me of the way Control has been taking over the Section 31 ships. So that was a little scary. So I don't know if I'd want to be on that ship.
I mean,
even though it's not Control, it's the Data that has somehow become sentient.
I'm just saying, I don't know. Put me on the ship that refuses to die.
Right.
That is literally the safest place.
Burnham starts time crystal meth tripping, and
right on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Seeing, everyone gets a death scene. It seems like every single person on the bridge has to have that dramatic death scene. Just like everyone gets a goodbye, mm-hmm. and everyone gets to say "I love you."
I bet the actor who plays Leland was like, "Fuck yeah, I get to bust in and fucking zap everyone in the face. Let's do this." But everybody dies.
This is for all the critics.
Yeah, everybody dies. It was kind of like a mini Infinity War ending,
right?
But but not as like traumatic, because you know it's all going to be reversed in 20 minutes. So
instead of a year,
yeah. But yeah, Michael has this really disturbing time displacement vision. It's all very jarring. And
did you notice that when everyone dies or starts dropping dead, Burnham reaches out, and the first person she reaches to is Georgiou. She like flips over her body.
Yeah.
And says, no, about her, and I was like, oh, their relationship has really evolved. Like, and you see it like back and forth through this episode. Like,
I think it's mm-hmm. her continual mommy issues, because like OG Georgiou was like her mentor, and she watched her die. Like, now she's watching her die again.
Got a lot of moms.
Get over
man.
It. You got like 8 moms.
We can make a sitcom out of this.
My 8 moms.
Octomoms.
It's almost there. And I mean, they're almost all in the same room. It's got to be a little weird.
Okay, so they want to remove Discovery from the galactic equation entirely. Which
we
got to
go back, Mike.
Got to go forward.
To the future.
This got me so excited. We're done with the teaser of the episode.
We're finally at the intro. The intro sequence.
Yes, the intro sequence. Let's talk about this intro sequence really quick. Okay, so there's debate. Are those time crystals that we see animated in the intro sequence, or are those dilithium crystals?
It's got to be time crystals, right?
Because they're green.
Just like it looks just like the one that Handsome Mount grabbed off of the space cave.
And it would make sense if they've been there since season one, because we saw Harry Mudd use time crystals in season one, right?
Right. And they know that this is a ship that's going to be involved in time travel. And it's already space and time. It's space warping. It's time travel. It's all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is they could have just made them. I would be interested if they've gotten like greener from season one to season two, just to like, you know, like.
But I'm not so sure, because I just went and watched the intro again, and it looks just as green.
Like from season one you watched it?
Yeah, I watched the one that was posted like over a year ago, the intro, on YouTube.
Well then.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They knew.
It's kryptonite.
They had some degree of a plan that they wanted. I mean,
to drop a little fun.
You know, I'm feeling being like I should just be contrarian, so I'm going to go dilithium crystal.
I forgot that was an option.
Yeah, I'm going to go dilithium crystal.
Thanks, Clyde.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
So they got to make a new Red Angel suit, and only Michael can wear it because she has her mom's DNA or whatever.
Spock does some quick shorthand for us, the audience, like to stop everyone from arguing. He's just like, hey, I'm going to drop a quick logic bomb on all of you guys. Obviously, she's the other Red Angel because she's the one who has the same DNA, and she has the future knowledge about all the stuff we need. So it's her. She's going to go in the suit. She's going to be the one that we blast up into the future. Deal with it.
He sounded like every argument I've ever had with my partner when you know that you were right.
Yeah.
That's Spock. This Spock.
Yeah. It was like said with a sigh of disdain for everyone else. Like, obviously.
Ugh, you dumb, dumb humans.
Let me save you 25 minutes of discussing this and just lay this out for you right here.
They also throw in a whole bunch of science gobbledygook here where they're like, we're going to smelt some titanium. We're going to lace it around the dilithium, whatever, plasmazoids. And I was like, okay, cool.
I don't need the specs of the suit. Just fucking make it.
I was kind of like, cool, man.
Yeah, I like that they just go, all right, we're going to do some quick science jargon real quick, and that's just going to help us keep moving the plot forward.
The one thing I needed for that to really work for me is like the montage.
I thought you were going to say like a bong hit.
No, I need the montage with like the music in the background and like a welder's torch and somebody just putting the suit together, you know, with like some...
Like a cool suction thing that goes into like a body meld of hers or something.
Like that whole thing. And then I've been like, nice. Now that's the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
Iron Man just like hammering out the suit. Exactly. That's what you wanted.
To the rock music in the background. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that's what I was looking
AC/DC.
For.
AC/DC. We get it. Yeah.
Just like Tilly on a saw. Like
That'd work for me. Time. That would definitely work for me.
Shoot to thrill.
And to what Mariah was saying earlier, Georgiou has a great plan, I thought. She's just like, yeah, why don't we just blast something and make a supernova ourselves? Yeah. We can do it. And
they're like, that would kill millions of people. And she's like, so.
That's a terrible plan. And it's like, hey, there's no bad ideas. And also, aren't we fighting for saving the rest of the galaxy of all sentient life?
Starfleet's not going to co-sign, you know, killing millions of people.
I mean, they've co-signed a lot of other stuff.
It's light genocide.
We're only going to do genocide to the beings that live in the mycelial network, not in our space.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, like we did again in this episode by using the fucking spore drive. But nobody seems to remember that. So listen, I thought there was I have a little nitpick here. So the idea is for Michael to wear a new Red Angel suit and then get the Discovery to follow her through the time portal that the Red Angel suit opens up, right? Mm-hmm. Through autopilot. But isn't the Discovery not responding to commands? Isn't it taken over by the
Maybe
information?
Maybe it's as long as self-preservation is part of its interest, it might just want to go there too because it will kind of get messed up by control if it stays here. So maybe it has a certain degree of self-awareness.
It could like actually force itself to stay through the gravitational pull of whatever this like portal thing she's gonna make, because if it's on autopilot, there's no one telling it that's a bad thing. It's just like, oh, I'm moving with the direction of the stream, you know, like,
okay, works for me.
Anyway. And I think the other subtlety is that so far what we've seen is the ship refuses to allow you to delete the data
or destroy the data,
right? But in terms of using the data, whether that's Starfleet or control, it doesn't seem to care. And so I think that's the thing. So in terms of as long as you're not trying to destroy it or kill it, it seems to be okay. So it'll go right in the future.
No, I get it now. I was dumb before.
Supposedly, Georgiou, or Burnham rather, is going to Bill and Ted into the future and just like set up some red dots where she knows to put them. And is this going to be next episode, or is this going to be all of season 3?
I know your theory is that it's all of season 3, right? And then she's lost in space and or in time, and we're looking for her?
Lost.
Maybe, but I think that if you recall the episode with her mom, was that last episode or two episodes ago?
Two.
Two.
They were able to address all of the different places that the Red Angel popped up in the span of like a minute and a half. So I feel like they're fully capable of addressing like her in a quick montage sequence where she places these red dots and what the last three are.
Please no. Okay. I mean, we've been on this journey for 11, 12, 13 episodes now.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm asking is, so we've
dedicate an entire other season to putting some dots.
Well, I mean, I would.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I don't know that I want that. But are we going to rush through three dots in 60 minutes?
Yes.
Like, but why? I mean, you were spending a dot per episode. Now you're going to do three.
Forward momentum, my friend.
I think so. You. I think the whole series is going to end with Burnham going through the portal and the ship going through the portal. And then you see everyone on the other side of the portal. Credits.
Series?
Yeah.
Series? What?
Not series.
Series.
You're saying or series.
The season. Well, okay. Yeah, sorry.
But what's the third season?
No, there's a third season. The season.
Got it.
I do think.
We're left guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking, and I kind of wrote down on my notes, like, we've got four of seven. So I was looking for another one, right?
Oh, we got a fifth here.
We did the fifth. That was over...
That was over the...
Post-planet.
Zahia.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we just got two more left.
Okay.
Is two enough in one episode?
Sure. I mean, look, here's the thing.
You think the last dot's going to be where they find her?
I've been a little bit critical of kind of the plot points and unraveling and loose threads. They're sizing this up to bring all this together. So I'm kind of going to give them the faith that if they want to do two red dots in an episode, I'm with it.
Tie it in a bow. Wrap. That's a wrap on this season. And we can move on to the next one.
So back to this episode, we're on scene number four or whatever. So we jump to Zahia, where Tilly knows the queen. We know it's Poe. And we talk about how she can recrystallize dilithium, but she won't trust anyone with a recipe for how to do that. And Poe's just a fucking delight here, like I was saying earlier.
She is so needed. They mention her, and then they sandwich the mention of her with the scene of Colburn Stamets, which we already kind of talked about.
Right, yeah.
But it was kind of a heavier scene. It was like a really heavy emotional scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally introduce her when she beams in, and she's like this refreshing breath of like youthful energy, and she's just like optimistic about everything.
She has this confidence.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, good. Like everything else is like really heavy, and everyone's saying bye and I love you, and it's just like,
she's like Spumoni ice cream.
Yeah. Yes.
I like how she cuts off Pike. She's like, Tilly!
Yeah.
Tilly's like, this is a captain.
it is that she's supremely confident, right? But not in this, what are we going to do? We'll figure it out. Like Pike confidence.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, it's Quang.
But it's
she's the Broad City Queen.
Yeah. It's a romantic comedy confidence. It's like, hey, we're going to be okay.
I literally wrote down, Poe is the shit.
She is.
Poe is the shit. I also wrote down, and I talked about this earlier, number one is also the shit for her little scene of just in case the shit goes down.
You like number one, huh?
Yeah, she's cool.
I mean, it's Rebecca Romijn.
I mean, it is. I mean, here's the problem I have when I look at number one. Is all I see...
My God, you're so contrarian.
No,
you like this episode?
No, I did. This is not a bad thing. I'm not. It's nothing bad. It's just that when I see number one, I'm trying to focus on number one, and all I see is Mystique from X-Men.
Oh, yeah. She's not blue.
I know she's not blue, yeah. But she's kind of blue in my head when I see it.
I hear it.
So I'm trying to make that distinction. But when you saw Poe, you were watching how Poe interacts with the crew, were you thinking, man, we could use a Poe in this cast?
She's like the new Wesley Crusher.
No,
ooh, right?
She's really fun.
Right? I don't know who Wesley Crusher is, really.
Oh, my goodness.
Wesley Crusher.
Ooh,
well, I know who the actor is.
That's a good parallel because he was the lone teenager in a position of semi-authority on the bridge of the Enterprise, for sure, just like she is a teenager on the ship and she has authority. But she rules. Wesley Crusher was okay.
He drools.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
I got a theory. I just came up with a theory.
Okay.
All right, and I'm looking at Mariah because I might be right and I could just be way off. Jet Reno dies.
No.
No.
And
shut your mouth.
Poe becomes the engineer for the...
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, she's a queen of a galaxy and she's like...
Yeah.
She's going to be stuck in the future, so it's not going to matter.
No, she's not. She's not going with him.
But I wrote at the bottom, did Poe get off the Discovery?
No, she didn't leave. She said she was going to stay.
She said that, and then everybody's like, where's Poe? And I was really confused by this until I remember she likes to go invisible.
Right.
Oh, right.
I thought she was going to stay and fight on one of the shuttles.
She made a point of saying that, and then I thought they said something of like, we're not sure that she's left, sir. Yeah. I can't get a read of if she's left. And
right.
Pike's like, I got other shit to do right now.
Like, we'll figure that out later. Yeah. But yeah, and then because here's the thing. Again, if you didn't see the short trek, you don't know that. Because they didn't show that in the preview.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, she like when she first came on board, she went all invisible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you think she's like actually been invisible and jumping in front of all the bullets and everyone's pretending to die on the bridge?
I don't think that.
What?
I don't know. That's interesting.
Also, there's no bullets.
Yes. I don't know where she is or why she's there, but I would assume that if she didn't get off the ship and they don't know where she is, that she's on the ship and she's invisible. Look, I like Jet Reno. Yeah. I'm just wondering if Tig Notaro has other stuff to do.
There was an NPR interview with her recently. She's like, this is like the funnest thing I've ever done. I love being on this show.
Yes.
And I hope they write more episodes for me.
I just don't know if she's going to sign up for season 3. Because, even now she's
been... It didn't seem like in that scene where she was sacrificing herself and saying, hey, Sam, it's Tilly. Go ahead and get out here. I'm going to touch this thing and get all like melty like Pike.
Here's what I think. I think Poe is in that room with Reno and is going to fix it.
Ooh.
Okay.
I don't think Reno's in any real danger.
No. Also, because I just put Poe plus Reno equals magic more.
Yeah. Exactly.
They like each other.
I like you. I like you too, dog.
Yeah.
Ride and die.
So we... Ride or die. We realize that charging the crystal like we want to do will burn it out, so it's a one-way trip to the future for Michael Burnham. And then I wrote down, will they all join her?
I wrote the same thing down. Get out of my notes.
The answer, yes. The answer is yes.
And then I have another thing I want to bitch about.
Okay.
I hate how Burnham took one small moment to say one like beautiful thing about like how proud she was that her mom created that suit. And Georgia's got to be a dick about it and be like, ugh, whatever. Like, right when she was like, yeah, my mom made that suit. When she's telling her, she's telling Poe. And Georgia's like,
we have time for that later.
Yeah, I was just like, man, let her have that moment.
Look,
she's being a jelly eighth mom. She's just a jealous eighth mom.
Here's the thing.
She's got eight moms.
You joke, but I actually think that I think that Georgia is the jealous mom.
Yeah, right? She
because
is.
I think
totally
part of it is that all the other moms had a different type of relationship with Burnham. Amanda had another kid. Really, when you think of Georgia, Burnham really is the only child she's ever really known.
Mm-hmm.
And as great as their relationship is, Burnham's always putting her at best third.
Right.
Right. You know, ahead of the other five, you know.
It's really like
fourth. Yeah, it's a natural reaction for her to have. Yeah.
You said fourth?
Yeah, because there's real Georgia and then alt-universe Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Taryn. Yeah, wow.
She's got eight moms.
All right. Burnham says she's leaving, and Ash is like, what, baby? You're leaving?
Little BFF.
No.
when they tell Ash, is like, hey, I'm leaving. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
And then it zooms out, and he's finding out this information about, like, the girl he loves, like sacrificing her to self to die in front of the entire bridge crew. And it's just like,
what?
And everyone else is here having to watch me hear this shit?
Yeah.
I will say, and I don't want to jump ahead again. We've already talked about it. But I love the fact that I needed Pike to recognize Nelson, because on this scene where everybody's standing outside and they're kind of panning these people, and I'm like, oh, wow. And they go to Nelson. I'm like, who the hell is that? And why do we care that they're coming? And then I realize, oh, okay.
Yeah. Reminding you who she was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had another technical question.
Mm-hmm.
They make a point about how they need to charge the time crystal with the spore drive, and mm-hmm. it's going to put the spore drive out of commission for 12 hours. Right. Now, did they move the spore drive onto the Enterprise? Because of what value would this spore drive be on this ship if they're taking that entire ship and sending it into the future? What else were they going to spore drive around and jump and do if the whole thing was they don't have that ship anymore. They're moving to the future. I didn't understand.
Well, I think it's because then there's the hope that they can come back if they have the spore drive. because then they could eventually jump the ship back, right? Because we can travel through time and space on this board.
They were concerned, like, all the ships are coming, and they're going to need to take and charge this thing up using the spore drive, and then they won't have the spore drive weapon. But I'm like, but you won't have the ship.
No, the issue is, okay, so
they're going to charge it up, then use the ship to fight everyone, and then open it up and take the time?
So when they open it up, they've got to get to this opening, right? And it's going to take a little time to open this, you know.
Yeah, the shuttles are going to last.
Yeah. But if you've got the spore drive, as we've seen, you know, Lorca do, if you got that spore drive, you can just hop around and start shooting people, and they can't get you. And so I think the hope is the Discovery could then do that as they're getting ready to go in. And so they have a better chance. It's the best weapon they have. Otherwise, you're dealing with Control and a bunch of Section 31 ships who the hell knows what kind of weaponry they have.
I bet Stamets doesn't even need it anymore. I think he's going to go Super Saiyan. His eyes are going to go white, and he's going to spore drive them all because he's now like this new like deity that's like exists outside of space and time. And he just hasn't fully tapped into it until he relinquished the one thing that tethered him to this universe, which was Culber.
Yeah.
And he said that beautiful speech about being able to let go of him because now he can go to his other true love, the spore mycelial network.
Right.
So you're saying that Culber was his constant?
He was his constant, but now he has a new one. Yeah.
So you're saying not only are we getting a potential Borg origin, but we're getting a potential Q origin with Stamets here.
No, I don't know.
Okay. I like where you're going with that, brother.
I do not.
Sorry.
All right. Okay. So yeah. Oh, eyes up for Commander Burnham. Crew steps in line to hear Michael say goodbye. She loves all of them. And it's nice. This landed for me. I like this a lot. Even though we had the awkward moment with the new blondie, Nelson. But it landed for me. I mean, you think about it. This moment actually took its time. And it reminded me of all the hell Michael's been through with this crew. And it was nicely acknowledged here.
It was a beautiful moment. Undercut by Sarek and wife showing up, and Sarek and Amanda showing up and saying goodbye and having that heartfelt moment. Undercut by Pike getting his special moment where everyone turns attention to him. Undercut by the Tilly and Burnham moment. I just felt there were so many of those moments.
It was good.
The specialness of that moment's getting diminished.
It wasn't because the crew was there, but then, you know, her parents weren't there, so we got that scene.
Also, them just being able to like pop in and out while they're like.
Well, that's why I think it was the first scene them knowing she was.
Well, because they have that Katra connection, so that's how he was able to find her and show up. That makes great narrative sense.
So
don't pout.
I liked this, and I struggled with it at the same time. A lot of times when I'm watching shows like this, I'm looking out for the pump fake, right? So if you've ever.
For the what?
The pump fake. Oh. So what a pump fake is, if you watch football, and for those, anybody listening.
What is football?
American football.
This
I know.
This is a Star Trek podcast.
I know, but, you know, I'll just say Tom Brady, everybody knows who he is.
A Star Trek podcast.
But there's this motion where the quarterback will move his hand to get the opponent to jump.
The fake out.
Right? It's a fake out. I know. Bear with me. No. It'll pay off.
Still talking sport?
It pay off. It'll pay off. So it is a fake out. And so I'm looking for this pump fake, this thing that's getting me to jump up somewhere where I think, oh, that's it, and that's not
Can
it.
Can you use another metaphor?
I'm trying, but this is the one that I use. And so what I'm looking for here is there's all this emotion. There's all this moving to looking and going, this goodbye to Burnham. And I'm thinking, okay. So I feel like I'm being led to say goodbye to a character on a show I care about, right? And then I'm going, but there's no way that happened.
Yeah.
And so that's the moment where I'm like, all right, so what's really going on? And that's what I'm trying to figure out. Why all the energy to say goodbye if we're not actually saying goodbye?
It's like a band you know is going to come out for the encore, right?
Yeah, right?
It's like if you go to see the Rolling Stones, you've paid $500,000 to see the Rolling Stones, and they've only played for an hour and a half, and then they leave the stage. You know they're coming back.
Right. What is this music you're talking about? This is a sci-fi show.
Not just that, but I think the moment where she tells everybody thank you for making these the best moments of my life, you know, she has her little speech on the bridge and everyone connects with it emotionally. That helps to inform their decision later, where they can't let her go and they want to support her and go with her. Does that make sense? Because they're in this emotional space with her, and they don't want to let her go. They want to support her, and
why wouldn't she just
and
tell
their family?
Hey, I touched the crystal. I see you guys all die. Just like don't be on
because
this ship.
Because it's Burnham, and she holds everything inside of her.
True. Character flaw.
It's true.
Into the very last moment.
They did specifically write this into her character.
Because she is a galactic rubber band with a martyr complex.
Yeah. Giorgio, very cutting words.
I did write down, too, before we got to the parents, there's like a little moment between Tilly and Poe. And I was like, oh, is Poe going to stay to be Tilly's girlfriend? Because I'm very down with that plot.
That would be okay.
They're so cute together.
They're so cute. And I love her little eyes and the way that they blink sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is Tilly going to do? That brings up an interesting question. What is she going to do now that Pike is leaving the Enterprise? Because, you know, that was where that was going. Tilly and Pike?
I think only you saw that.
Okay.
I did not feel that. I'm feeling Tilly and Pike.
I was feeling it, too.
Thank you.
I'm not against you. So, Sarek and Amanda appear, and it's nice. Even though you had... It's kind of a natural culmination to the entire arc of the Sarek household, you know, family drama here, where Sarek finally comes around, shows a little bit of emotion. Of course, it takes, you know, a literal breaking point where his daughter is going to be taken away from him forever for him to say, forgive me for being a shitty dad, and basically expressing some love, unlike a Vulcan.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
How emotionally manipulative. Like, she's going to say, no, I don't forgive you at that point. What a prime opportunity. It's like when I go to confession, I go, forgive me for this and any other sins I can't think of. Let me just do a big catch-all real quick.
What is this religion you speak of?
I don't
know. This is a
sci-fi
podcast.
It's a Star Trek pod. This had me, I mean, what was going on here with Sarek literally had me thinking, is this control Sarek? Is this not really Sarek? But of course it was, because it was out of character a little bit, but I went with it.
You know how I knew for sure it was him? Was how awkward that hug was at the end.
Oh yeah, they like
the weird
Amanda and her just go all in, and he's like, oh, I guess like this is what we're
that's
doing.
That's when I was like, oh,
this
you're
is what
still
we're doing
the correct character. Yeah. You know? It's like emotion. Oh, physical contact.
Yeah.
I feel like I
don't even do that with her mother.
I need to figure out, I want this backstory on Sarek and Amanda, because they are so opposite. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out how that happened.
Do you not listen to the Paula Abdul song?
I
mean,
I can sing
again
it.
With the music. I can what sing is it. This music
that was
you're
a
talking
good
about?
One. Good reference.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so okay,
she
so
makes the bed halt. And he steals the covers.
Nice.
That's a good one. Okay, so Michael reviews her mom's video journals to learn from them.
Oh, wait. Are we done with the Sarek thing?
She wears a cool jumper.
I'm still thinking about Paula Abdul.
This podcast is off the rails.
Like, I did want to say real quick about the thing about like how much importance they put in her saying goodbye to her parents, is that may potentially lend a little bit of credence to that theory that she goes into the future and does reunite with her mom, and we need some sort of emotional payoff to this being at least the previous life that she did live. If in some eventuality she's able to go and join forces with her mom and course correct her parents ever getting killed, because right. She won't have that life where she lived growing up as a half Vulcan. So getting this key scene, I think there could be a little bit more to that.
There could be, but there doesn't need to be. For what it was, I think it was just a nice culmination of this small family arc that we've seen over the past several episodes.
Also, isn't Burnham great in like these past few episodes? Oh, remember at the beginning amazing. Of the season, like you guys were like not on board Burnham.
Yeah.
But she came through.
Yeah. It felt like
she's
early.
Clutch.
She is clutch.
Sports reference.
Nice.
I know that one.
I think early on in this season, we were kind of questioning just what she had to do, what she was doing. Now, these last few episodes, she's been amazing. I'm wondering if this is, of all the goodbyes that I saw, the telling Sarek and Amanda goodbye, I started to question if that was the most real goodbye. Like, will Burnham see them again? Mm. Right? Like, if this show takes off and it's different in that from now on, this crew, it's a much smaller crew that's battling new things in the future, which really works to tie up some things, then this is a legitimate goodbye for Burnham and Sarek and Amanda.
Right.
And that works for me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, we don't need it could happen, Grant. They could be telegraphing that, but we don't need it.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, so Tilly wasn't there when Burnham said goodbye to the bridge, and of course she says, our goodbye needed to be non-existent. It's not who we are. So she surprises her with all of our space friends in the corridor saying, we're all going to go with you, including Jet Reno.
Ride or die, yes.
Yeah. I was so excited when I saw Jet Reno. I literally said, yes!
I know, I saw
she's going with him. My wife is like, what do you do? What?
And then we see Spock there, and we're like, you're not staying. Right. Get out of here,
Spock. I was
Spock.
Like, not this guy. I want him to come, but mm-hmm. I don't think he's coming. Ash will not go. Mm-mm. Oh, you're saying?
I was just thinking... when I saw Spock there, I was like, well, yeah, we know he's not going to go. I wonder why have him there, right? Is it just like to show that he's emotionally attached? But we know he's not going to end up wherever they end up.
To tell us, the audience, like, everything's good. Nothing's going to happen. Spock's there.
But I think you knew that. I think it would have been more interesting if he could not go. Like, from, like, just beginning.
I think that's where we're going with that torpedo stuck in the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going to be able to go. But I just think from that scene on, I would have been completely in, like, oh, this is exactly what's going to happen. They're all going. This is the new crew.
Yeah.
But I saw him and started to question, not all of y'all going to make it.
Not all of them, yeah. Well, Ash says he's not going to go. He's going to stay behind and make sure Section 31 stays clean and away from control. And
I'm going to a spinoff show.
Exactly. I'm so noble, I have my own show.
I can't stay with you. I'm a spinoff.
Mike, you might have mentioned this before, that... we were looking at Culber being part of that spinoff. I think you might be right about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think so. Even though he says he's going to the Enterprise.
Unless we're getting an Enterprise spinoff.
Two spinoffs. Four spinoffs. Too many spinoffs.
So many treks. I don't know about this.
Lots of treks.
All of the treks. I did write down, you got 11 minutes. You can make out a little bit.
That was a quick Good point.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good call.
You can stroke that greasy mane a little
bit. There's a lot that can be done in 11 minutes.
I did actually write smash, but I wasn't sure how
I wanted to get. I mean,
this
I personally
Star Trek podcast.
I need a little bit more than 11 minutes to go to do all of that.
Oh, thank you for the clarification.
But I'm just saying, you can get a lot done in 11 minutes.
Thank you for clarification. okay, so yeah, we get
all right.
I was trying to move on. So yeah, Saru sends his sister a goodbye message.
Everyone gets a goodbye.
Everybody.
Except Linus. No goodbye from Linus.
No Linus in this episode.
Linus isn't staying on the Discovery, though.
That's true. Yeah.
I know. Where's my goodbye between Burnham and Linus?
He had to go back to the Orville.
Linus was the first person... on the Enterprise. He said, the hell with this. Good
go
luck.
I'm going to play my game in this cafeteria.
Your word games are pretentious. I'm out of here.
So yeah, everyone else does their kind of little heartfelt goodbyes into their like Dear Diary things, little recorders.
I did notice that every now and then, especially when the Enterprise shows up and they're on the Enterprise, the original series theme picks up. And I also heard bits of the Next Gen theme pick up, which was cool. Yeah, that was neat. Of course, the Next Gen theme is really the theme from the first original Trek movie, repurposed. Star Trek. Sorry.
I don't even know what's going on.
I thought what you were saying was fascinating.
All right, thank you.
Did you notice that Kayla had her rock, Tazzy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's Tazzy?
I don't know, but I assumed you're immediately jealous of whoever Tazzy is.
Well, no, because I'm just assuming that she's a big fan of the Tasmanian Devil.
She said, you're my best friend, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's platonic, bro.
I don't know. There was a picture of a singular human right behind her as well. So.
She also makes that point
Mike.
Of saying, she says,
me.
You know what? You taught me it only takes one person to save another. Mm. And I was like, I wonder if that's a little foreshadowing of like what's going to happen with something else in this episode.
Hope she doesn't die. I like her. You guys know I like her?
A little bit.
You got the tattoo. I feel like it's commitment at this point.
It's an entire back piece, for gosh sakes.
Guys, if you want to see my tattoo, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. We'll take a video.
And then we get to see Pike back in yellow.
Yeah, looking good in yellow.
I mean, he looks good in everything.
Yeah.
The yellow was a stretch, though.
And he's not going with him.
Mustard's hot this season.
Pike in his Enterprise suit, and he says it's time to appoint a new captain. But do we get a new captain appointed here?
We don't.
What the fuck? Saru is denied again.
Once again, we pretend like who was currently the de facto captain, it was Saru. Am I crazy?
It was Saru.
You're right.
It
was. Prior to him leaving, he dangles this again. It's like, hey, you guys are all on a doomed ship. Who wants to be captain? Like, what another dick.
But do you think he's doing that, though, in more of a, like, I don't want to name someone because... if I do, then it's that person has to go down with the ship, right?
Right, it's their responsibility.
Yeah. But if no one is named, you are all in this as a team.
Okay.
That's how I took it.
I like
that's
that
a little bit sweeter.
I also think inevitably next season we're going to be getting a Captain Burnham.
I've been waiting for this for two seasons. Yeah. So, I mean, look, I like Saru and all. I've never felt him as captain.
Saru's ready to play, man.
I get it. I just don't want to be
captain. Balls dropped and everything. He's ready to go.
Yeah, he's going to be a great number
one. He's a man now.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a great number one.
No, he should be captain. Nope. He deserved it.
I'd sooner want to see Tilly as captain.
So Pike says goodbye to the bridge
Killy,
crew.
I should say.
Captain Killy.
Mm-hmm.
Pike says goodbye to the bridge crew.
They all stand at attention.
Calls them exceptional. I like that.
Yeah.
Saru, I'll miss you most of all, he says.
Do you think he meant it?
I think he did.
I think he's going to miss Burnham most.
I think he just watched the Wizard of Oz recently.
I needed that to be a little tighter for me, only because it didn't connect. Like, I got the sentiment. I believe the character meant it, but I think over the course of the season... I didn't get their relationship to be that close where he'd be like, I'd miss you most of all.
I was mostly just already missing Pike, knowing that he's not confirmed for next season, thinking that we're only going to get one more episode with him. So when he was standing at attention and then the doors whoosh, you know, in front of him and he was gone, I was like, but I like him so much. He's like one of my favorite captains in all of Star Trek, and we've only seen one season of TV with him. You know, it's nuts. I'm more bonded to him than I am to James Kirk, probably.
I thought, kind of going back to what could have been taken as like a weird throwaway line of like, I'll miss you most to Saru. I think he was mostly saying that to cement that I do think you should be captain. That was his like,
yeah, that's how
it's you. But I'm going to let you all decide, because if y'all are stuck in this crazy time warp, you have to pick who's your leader, you know?
Yeah. He's like, it's you, because if you appoint Burnham captain, she's just going to sacrifice the ship every chance she gets.
Or herself. Honestly, he's probably just like, it has to be Saru, because Burnham's eventually going to sacrifice herself to death. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of that hero moment with Jet Reno, where she's like, hey, I'm gonna stick around here. You guys go ahead and head out. And I just really wanted to touch a time crystal once in my life.
Yeah, there's a problem. The charge will make the crystal effect kind of seep out, you know, and they have to contain that. So I guess she stays back to try and contain it.
But she sees the same thing, essentially, mm-hmm. that Burnham saw, or at least they replay a few of the same clips. Mm-hmm.
With the focus on that torpedo being lodged in the Enterprise.
Yeah, that seemed to be more substantial for her, because she's not on the bridge when the big shootout thing with Leland goes down. Right.
Correct. Right.
So she could be the wild card that you know, pulls some magic and saves them from that fate.
Maybe. And I think Mariah's theory might be right, that Poe is hanging out with there in that room and they might team up to save the Enterprise. Yeah.
Question.
Some bubble gum.
Where's Georgiou?
She's on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Was she? Okay.
Well, she's just about. Actually, they have her go with Pike to beam them out. But maybe she beams them out. Does she stay on the ship?
Oh,
that's
when
she.
That's the question.
She gives that confession, like, "Hey, by the way, I'm Taryn." And Pike, like, "Oh, really?
Wink."
Like, yep. He totally knew the whole time. Right. Like, you ain't fooling me.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, we see her beam them out, but like,
that's right. We don't see her end up on the Enterprise, do we? I thought we did.
But she's got to head up Section 31 spinoff, right?
True. So.
But we do see her die on the bridge. In the vision.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yep. Okay, so that's why she's hanging around still.
I guess so, because it's a determined future.
There is a lot to find out in 1 week here.
Yeah, dude.
Especially what is up with the Darth Maul lady that's on the Enterprise. There's some red face.
Yeah, yeah, the red face. Yeah, yeah,
lady. Like, what is going on with that?
All She's right. a Jedi. That's what's going on with that.
So the BattleBots arrive. It's time to go. The control arrives. Prepare for battle, says Saru.
Prepare for battle.
Yeah, boy. And it's over. And when it ended, I was like, what?
I know.
Yeah.
Right?
Why would they do this to us?
Like, why can't we just get a 2-hour finale
Thank
in a
you.
Single night?
I'm thinking the same thing.
And I was looking on Twitter. A lot of people thought this was the actual finale. And they were like, what? That's it?
I know, because the writer's room Twitter was just like, get ready for our 2-part finale. And so I was like, oh, is it all tonight?
Right.
You know, they didn't even like linger on black too long. It was like black. And then it was like, oh, here's the next episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, there's one more. So, because everyone's like, I'm done with this show. Why would they end it like that?
But the next episode looks like it has some great visuals. You got Michael Burnham flying in space in the Red Angel suit. Looks fucking badass.
Yeah. I have one more question for you guys.
Do it.
Poe mentioned she has some dilithium crystal things, and I guess these are instrumental in warp drive technology.
Yes.
But warp drive technology does not exist yet in this current time period.
It does.
That's
however, how they get around, yeah.
However, the dilithium crystals have to be mined, and Poe has a way to regenerate them synthetically. Right. So we don't have to keep looking for them.
Which is a key component, because in the other series, dilithium crystals are like everywhere.
Yeah, because everyone's warping. Okay, I don't know what I was thinking.
Exactly.
It's cloaking technology that doesn't exist yet? What was the thing about it? It does exist.
It does exist, but not for the Federation.
And it's not
Klingons have it.
Yes. I mean, we've seen Section 31 has it. But the issue is that the Federation also will say that they have it's not allowed.
It's unethical.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's a whole series about phase cloaking and whatnot.
Well, I think that's about it.
Yeah, the thing with dilithium crystals is a nod to the post-scarcity future that we're heading to.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's it. It's over.
We got one episode left.
Man, only one episode left.
Hey, all you people that have been like hesitant to jump on Patreon, now's the time, baby.
Now's the time to drop your $20 donation at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Give us that $2 for 1 week.
Your donation does really help. It helps. We pay for the hosting costs. We pay for our CBS All Access account. And guys, we're going out for dinner pretty soon. Have a fun Star Trek nerd dinner to culminate our ending this
What's
season
an appropriate
together.
Star Trek meal. What do they eat? Time crystals.
Anything they want, because they have whatever they want.
Yeah, whatever they want.
I feel like the theme of this season though has been burgers.
Yeah,
everyone's been chomping on the burgers.
That's true. I could do burgers.
We just need to do some sort of like open market cafe where we can all just kind of pick whatever food we want.
Let's go to the mall food court.
The mall food court.
The mall food. I mean, that'd be it. We need a sci-fi themed restaurant.
I'm sure there's some. This is Austin, Texas.
Is there not like a futuristic medieval times? There needs to be.
Or we could all just go to Sherwood Forest Fair.
Oh, there we go. Just Red Fair.
Dressed up as Trekkies.
Yes.
Ashley does that.
Ashley does it.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we are running pretty long, but you know what? There was a lot to say about this episode. We're going to take a quick break and come back with our MVPs.
Oh, guys, it's time for us to hand out our awards for this episode.
Awards.
So we're going to give our unanimous decision for the best performance of the episode and our unanimous decision for the best crew behind the scenes development of the episode. And then we're going to go around and give our individual honorable mention, whether it be a person's performance or something we liked also about the crew. So, first up is our favorite performance.
Yes.
It's a tie.
We gave it a tie.
We cheated.
Yeah. So, we decided that we liked both the performance of Burnham and Pike, a.k.a.
Handsome Mount.
And Sonequa Martin-Green.
Yes, sir.
They're both so great in this episode.
Yeah, we couldn't pick a favorite. And I think the episode itself couldn't pick a favorite. It kept kind of toggling back and forth between, like, kind of tipping the hat and bowing down to those two characters.
Yeah. And, you know, they both know their characters and they do such a superb job. So they can have the award every week.
Pretty much.
Let's talk about the crew, though. What was our favorite part of the crew? Part of the production.
We thought the writers did a phenomenal job with all of the goodbyes and the many sort of plot lines that are starting to come and tie together, and all of the kind of emotions felt real and not overly dramatic, but dramatic enough.
Yeah, I also want to give the writers props because in previous episodes, when we have this task that we have to do, we sometimes, like, getting to that task or getting everything together just feels boring. But here they made it exciting with the introduction of Poe. You know, oh, we have all this techno stuff we have to do. We need help. Hey, here's Poe. Made it fun, right?
Right.
And there was just a bunch of elements like that. You know, Jet Reno came in, made it fun. So they made all of the, like, minutiae of building the suit and getting to where we needed to go really fun. So hands down to Michelle Paradise, Jeremy Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah, and I think that when you have material like this where you've got some sensitive, emotional notes that you're trying to hit, especially in a sci-fi world, it's easy to go way over and it's just like, oh my goodness, or way under and it just kind of be a little flat. And I thought they did a really good job of helping us feel like those goodbyes and those moments with it. Without it being This Is Us.
Right. honorable mentions. Clyde, do you want to kick off things?
I thought this was shot well. I thought it moved well. And so I want to give an honorable mention for the crew to the director.
Okay.
And then from an acting standpoint, I really liked both Number One and Amanda. I thought for the limited time they were on screen, they drew you in. Even if I was looking at Rebecca Romijn in blue in my head.
Mariah.
Yeah, I agree with the director because I think even though there are words on the page, without someone who's accurately directing the actors, working with the actors to get those performances for these goodbyes, you never know which way the actors are going to go. And I thought the choices that they made with what takes they decided to go with was smart. And then I, for acting, shout out to Poe for coming in because it's hard. It's the last two episodes of the season. You know, you're coming in hot as this, like, very big character, but I thought she just did such a great job of, like, melding right into the ensemble.
Yeah, that is my – I'm going to mirror that. Yeah, Yadira Guevara Prip as Poe. Fucking awesome. Just injected some great energy here, and it was wonderful that we had a fully formed version of this character, and she just did a great job playing it.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. Poe was fantastic. Yeah. Really, really fun. I my pick was going to be Linus, but I guess I can say Poe. Man, Linus.
Missy, okay. Linus. Just watch the Orville next week.
Okay.
He'll be on there. All right, guys. Thank you for sitting with us through this long episode.
But Longer than the actual show.
Yeah. We just had a lot to say, man. And it's the end of the season, so what the hell?
We're excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to next week.
Let's run along. Come back next week for our recap of the finale. And visit us at StarTrekPod.com. Rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And
y'all know the drill.
Find us on Spotify, all that stuff. Find us on Twitter at
Support
Star Trek Pod.
Podcasts you love.
Yes, please do that.
Because we love you, just like Burnham said.
Yes, we love you, and live long and prosper.